Welcome to Optimizing, the podcast about leading Africa's digital future. I'm Professor Barry Dwolansky. This is the first episode and introduction to season 3 of our podcast. In February 2020, I launched this podcast. I launched it and decided to call it Optimizing, Leading Africa's Digital Future. It aims to talk about the digital economy and the digital society in South Africa and Africa. It talks about leadership in our digital economy, and it talks about the future. I decided to deal with the future by looking both backward and forward. I set up the podcast as a conversation, an intergenerational conversation, between those who will become those future African digital leaders and those of my generation who have led and continue to lead digital transformation in South Africa and in our region. I set up a wonderful young team to work with me on this project. One is a filmmaker, a writer and producer. His name is Evan Wigdorovitz, and he is passionate about podcasts. He joined my team as our editor. He also designed our logo. Callum Cool is a musician and composer. He works on sound design for video games, animation, and film. He also has a passion for podcasts. He brought his talents to bear in composing the theme music and other sound elements for the Optimizing podcast. And then there's Karen Gammy. She joined me as co-presenter. She is a philosophy graduate who now works in machine learning and AI. She's in the process of launching her own future in the digital economy. Karen represents the younger generation in our intergenerational conversation and brings her own special brand of energy and humor to our podcast. Season 1 of the podcast focused on some of the things I've done in my long career as a digital professional, researcher, and academic teacher. In Season 2, we introduced the theme of passing the baton. We viewed life as a relay race in which one generation runs its race and then passes on a baton, a legacy, to the next generation. We interviewed an amazing array of fascinating digital leaders who spoke about their race and their legacy. We are now proud to be launching Season 3, and I'll tell you more about it at the end of this episode. Once more, I'm joined by Karen Gammy. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Barry.
And our guest, Yuval Genga. Hi, Yuval.
Hey, Barry. Thanks for inviting me. I really, really appreciate it.
Great to have you here. So, Yuval Genga is an electrical engineer. He has a master's in engineering from WITS and a PhD from WITS. He completed his PhD in 2019. He now works as a consultant in the advanced business analytics team at the company Optinum Solutions. So, Yuval, your postgraduate qualifications are from WITS, but where did you grow up and where did you study to do your undergrad qualifications?
Yeah, so I was born in Kenya, born and raised in Nairobi, actually. So I think I'll just start from the my origins and then I'll get to the point how I found myself in South Africa. So I grew up in a very academic home. My father was a professor in physics, and my mother, until the time of her passing, was actually working on her PhD. So education was something that was really highly regarded in our home and was something that was really emphasized to me at an early age. Actually, it was emphasized so much to the point that I knew that getting my BSc wasn't going to be the end of it. Like, I knew at least I was going to do my MSc. That was something that me and all my siblings already already knew. So going into varsity, I got in with a very different perspective when a lot of my classmates were thinking about like what they were going to do outside of varsity. I was trying to think of like what kind of MSc degree am I going to take? Like what topic did I like so much? What I didn't like? What did I want to avoid? Or what did I just really want to do? What was I passionate about? And that was something that I really tried to figure out for most of my undergraduate time, which was in University of Nairobi. I don't know if I mentioned it. Yes, I was University of Nairobi graduate. Now, in my final year, I by chance landed upon the final year project that we do, which how we do it in Kenya is more of a lottery-based system. So because I didn't want to have to fight with people over projects so that I get the projects that I didn't like, I chose a project that I knew a lot of people were essentially going to avoid and was something that I kind of had some interest in. So I was like, you know, let me take this project. And that was actually a really good decision, which only in hindsight I was able to see, because it was a topic that was on antennas and how they essentially receive and transmit data and improving the efficiency of that. That's where my passion for telecommunications actually began. I really enjoyed doing the research part of it. I really enjoyed just doing it. I learned more in that project that I did, I think, amongst any of the other units that I had done in my whole undergrad time. And at that point, I knew, like I always knew I was going to do my MSc, but at that point, I was like, I want to do my MSc and I want to do it in telecommunications because this is something interesting. I'd really like to continue doing research. I'd really like to continue finding out more and just continue to learn about things, you know. And I graduated in 2012. In 2013, did my applications and I found myself at VETS. And as they say, the rest is history.
Well, in fact, we were very pleased that you came to VETS.
Thank you.
And you came to my school, to the School of Electrical and Information Engineering. And you did research in telecoms. And without getting too technical, can you tell us a bit about what you did in your master's and PhD research?
Yeah, so when I applied for VITS, I spoke with one of the professors. Okay, he was still a senior lecturer at the time. He worked with the coding section of telecommunications, and he was, me and him, as we spoke, had an exchange via emails. We kind of had a rapport and we saw like we essentially had the same vision. So I was under him during my master's and my PhD, and his research was focused a lot on the forward error correction. So forward error correction, in the simplest way I can describe it, is sending data from me to you without, and you receiving it without error. So the data, like the way we're speaking right now, data goes through the internet, goes through a noisy channel and gets to you, and it's decoded and you get it without error, but doing it in a very efficient way.
So that was your PhD and your master's research.
Yeah.
It was based epic. Most on that. I know very little about this like area that you've spent like so much of your time like researching, but it sounds very cool. And I think the analogy that you provided is really just like, whew, I am so glad that kind of work has been done so that now we can also just hear people in like crystal clear clarity. That is really epic. I saw in your bio that you mentioned that you kind of had the opportunity to spend some time doing research in Germany. Firstly, very cool country, good country of choice. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience, sort of like what kind of research you were doing, what you were experiencing in Germany?
Yeah, Germany was a very interesting experience for me. I actually enjoyed it a lot. Like going there, I applied through the DART program, and they had a successful application, and I was able to go there on a 6-month short-term research grant. When I got there, the first days, though, were very interesting because, like I told you, I was born and raised in Nairobi, which is a relatively busy city. came to Johannesburg, the same vibe, like busy and stuff like that. And then I went to Ulm. Ulm is a small city in the southwestern part of Germany. Very beautiful. Like from the university where I was from, like during the summer in the clear blue sunny days, you could actually see the Alps. It was like a really beautiful city. But it was also like relatively small to what I was used to. So the change of pace was something that I had to adjust to, you know, like the the best way I described it was when I was talking with one of the friends that I made on that side was in Johannesburg or Nairobi, no one has to tell me it's Friday on a payday. Like I'll just leave the house and I'll be like, I know it's a Friday, it's a payday. In Ulm, it was a bit different, you know, but I was able to figure things out, at least to the best that I could at the time, and went to the institute where I was working in. I was working under Professor Martin Bossert, someone who's been in the industry for a while. It was really a privilege and an honor for me to work under him, and I really learned a lot from him, not just about telecommunications, but just about how research is done and how to do research in the right way. That was something that that was a big thing he really pushed for. And that was something that he also, like, from the jump just told me, like, this is something that we're going to do. And that's one of the things that you're going to take away, regardless of whatever project that I was going to do there. I was going to take away that work ethic and that way of doing things the right way. Yeah, so working there was interesting. It was interesting. And they did really have a really good work ethic. And it was, I'd say one thing I learned about the Germans, at least at Ulm anyway, is work time is work time and playtime is playtime. They don't they don't mix the two. And also that was the thing, because like here, whenever I want to take a break, I just go and talk to someone. There they're like, no, we're still working. And then like at lunchtime, at lunchtime is when they talk and they're loud and you're like, wait, what happened? You know, like it just, it's like almost a switch. But it was still interesting to learn, and it was an interesting process. And also just working under Bossert, one of the things that I learned from him was even if he do all this theoretical research, he still stayed really close with industry. So all his research was still very aligned to a more practical implementation, providing actual solutions for actual problems that people were experiencing. And that was one thing I was like, I won't only take away the work ethic or the ability to do things the right way. I'll take away that proponent where even if I'm going to do research, I'm not going to do just research that's highly theoretical. It also has, the end goal has to be something that can be applied and used, especially considering that we're in the African continent, which requires a lot of solutions. But that was something that I really liked about working under Prof. Bossert, and something that I took away from him.
It's an incredible experience for a young researcher to get to travel anywhere in the world. And I think that the kind of things you talk about, where you had an opportunity both to do good research, but also to experience life in another environment, in another country. So you came back to Wits, and your period at Wits, doing your master's and PhD, one of the things you did was you were chairman of the student chapter of the IEEE. And for those of our listeners who might not know, what is the IEEE? And what did you do in your role as chairman of the student chapter?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about the IEEE is that you'll find even a lot of the engineering students don't know what the IEEE is. For them, it's this really big organization that's thousands of miles away from them, and it's not very approachable. And that was something when I was the chairman, I was like, one of my goals is to try and make it approachable. So the IEEE is a professional body that focuses not only in networking, but in collaboration and research. Now, for us as a committee at the University of Witwatersrand, we wanted to emphasize that aspect of collaboration and networking to make the students understand that IEEE is a friend of yours. Like it's not an organization. It's actually a place where it's a friend that can give you more friends. So we wanted them to understand it or see it from that perspective, so that even when they'd be working at whatever jobs they were in, they'd understand the importance of such organizations, or even if it's not necessarily the IEEE. And for me as well, working as the chairman of the IEEE, I wanted to help students understand the skills that they're taught in the classroom, how they fit in into industry. Because IEEE is, like I said, it's a big company, but it's also a really amazing company. So in the student branch, they have funding for different kind of events. So we'd be able to organize little colloquiums, little meetings with traveling lecturers who would come over. And we wanted the students to be able to interact with these lectures or interact in this all these different trips that we'd organize, so that they'd see the big picture of what they're learning in classroom. Because like how I mentioned before, most of my undergrad, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I wanted the students to kind of figure this out a bit early so that they can plan themselves better moving forward, you know. So it was a really good experience. It was a really fun experience. Actually, I'd say one of the things that I enjoyed the most, or one of the best things that was done under my tenure, even if I'd say it was a hugely collaborative effort, was we were able to organize, in 2018, we were able to organize our Women's Day in Engineering, where we got students from neighboring girls' schools at VITS to come over at VITS to just walk through the labs and see all the cool stuff that's been done in the engineering school. So I helped in the planning phase, but then I flew out to Germany, and the team on this side did an amazing job to make sure that thing happened, because it was a huge success, and it was something that to this day I'm still proud of, that we were able to do. And at least even if we touched one or two girls, it was an amazing thing to do.
That is really epic. I mean, as someone who is neither an engineering student nor a VITS student, like, it's just so important that those kind of like professional bodies are there to also just like provide that kind of like mentorship and friendship, is the way you described it. That feels really, really important. And then also to be going out and doing like meaningful work with communities that you care about. That is epic. Cool. Just to kind of fast forward a little bit, in 2019, like, you had a whole PhD. Congratulations, by the way. That is no small feat.
Thank you so much.
Sure. You then went off to work, and I guess this is kind of where our paths kind of cross. Your bio talks about how you have a keen interest in data science and machine learning. Barry mentioned earlier that, like, I'm now involved in machine learning and AI, so I'm a data scientist at a bank. And yeah, I guess without getting too into the details about it, can you kind of give us a high level as to what sort of work you're doing now in the analytics team at Optinum Solutions?
Thanks for asking that, actually. So as with all my questions, I'll start back at the origin of it. So for me, with regards to my interest in data science and machine learning, I'd say this happened during my PhD, but it happened at an advanced stage in my PhD that I couldn't necessarily force it into my research, you know. So I was always looking at it at the corner of my eye, and I was always seeing all this stuff they're doing. Like, there was so much that was happening at the time, I remember. And for me, the point when I realized that machine learning and data science is a useful tool, or is something that I wanted to really push for, was the moment when I realized that it had applications and solutions for across various professions. Like, it cuts through so many different professions, and I was like, this can be a skill or a tool that can be used to provide solutions in all so many different industries, no matter how niche, or even if, like, we're looking at, and even it can be contextualized to places like, for instance, South Africa or anywhere else in the world. Like, you can use this tool to create so many solutions for the different problems that you're facing in different fields. That kind of power that essentially gives to the people was something that I wanted to be part of. And that drove me to my current career path. So when I applied at Optinum and got the job there, I remember during our introductions, we had talks from different teams. And when the advanced business analytics team came and just spoke, I was like, yeah, this is the team that I want to be in. This is, I want to work with these guys. Yeah. It's like, this is the one. This is the one. And I really pushed for it. And I was very fortunate to find myself on the team. Yeah. So in terms of the work that we do, we work with quite a number of clients. And I'd say I'm on the team that works with one of the telecommunications companies. And that's for obvious reasons, because I have a background with them. But what we do there is we essentially manage a price plan, which is a price plan that's mostly leaning towards voice in a world that's moving to data, which is also a very interesting challenge in its own, by its own right. But like, what we do is we just use a lot of the data science and machine learning to kind of create dynamic price plans to keep subscribers engaged with the price plan and to have a good experience with it so that they can just continue using it. So that's, in a nutshell, that's what we do on our side. It was actually, I'd just say the time I joined the team was also a very interesting time because I joined during the lockdown. And during lockdown was a very interesting time because I'd say I was able to see data science and machine learning at its best, because during lockdown, subscriber behavior changed so it was so erratic. Like, we had all this data that we used to do different things, but during lockdown, we're like, oh yeah, there's this data, let's just put it aside for now and try and figure out what's happening, because none of the trends were matching anymore, you know. And it was a challenge, but it was something that we were able to, at least at the end of the year, we were able to like, oh yeah, we've learned our lessons and we have overcome and gotten to a point where we know what's happening now, you know. Yeah.
This is so compelling, and I feel like I have a bunch of questions that are not at all related to this podcast episode. So I will table them and probably bug you offline. But that's epic. And I totally get what you're saying about, you know, like machine learning and AI in general is like both a way of like solving problems, but also just like a really good way of like learning how to think and perceive the world. And I remember you mentioned earlier that, you know, despite the research you were doing, you always wanted to do something pragmatic. Like, you wanted to kind of get your hands dirty. And I can also see how like the machine learning and AI space really offers one the opportunity to do that. And especially like, you know, I guess solution for like problems that are very like African specific and African centric.
I just wanted to say as well, and it's, I mean, I'm sure some people know, and I'm sure you know, Yuval, but the company you're working for, Optinum, was a startup that was founded from our school, the School of Electrical, it was then the Department of Electrical Engineering at FITS. And the founders were some of my colleagues and students at FITS. So it's kind of really exciting that you've still kept that connection going forward. I just wanted to sort of go back a second and to ask about your experience at FITS. So, you know, we at FITS have a very biased view of the world, because we think we're such a wonderful university.
But, we are number one.
And I know Karen from UCT also has a very biased view of the world.
Yes, although I will say that Vitz is excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. But I'm just kind of, if you could just maybe kind of reflect a bit, as a Vitz alumnus and having gone out into the world, having been in Germany, working for a great company like Optinum, in terms of your Vitz education, in what way has it prepared you for the world you're in?
So I'd say Vitz, coming to Vitz, and I can speak like not only from my time in Germany, I can also speak from my time at the University of Nairobi as well, my undergrad experience. So coming to Vitz, once I came to Vitz, like my first year, everything was still shiny and stuff because I was still new. But once I settled in, I'd say doing my postgrad was such a unique experience. And part of the reason why I say unique is because we studied in a postgrad area. And in that postgrad area, everyone comes there, everyone talks, everyone meets, everyone interacts. And I'd get to just talk with people who are doing different research from mine, try and find out what kind of problems they were tackling, and not just problems limited to research. We just talk about anything. Like it was such there was a social experience that came from it beyond just the academic thing, and just learning how to interact with different people, learning how to talk to different people, which were things that I carried over to Germany as well. Because in Germany, I went there, like I told you, it's a relatively small city in the southwest, and there's people understand English, but they don't like to speak it, you know? So, like, I'd go maybe, because I do play basketball once in a while, I'd go and I'd play basketball, and I just use some of the social skills that I picked up from Vitz and to essentially make friends. A fun fact, I learned how to count to 21 because that was the first thing I learned in German, to count from 1 to 21 because I was playing basketball there. So that was a quick thing. But there was an element of socializing and critical thinking that came from just being a Vitzi and carrying it over to Optinum, which has, in many ways, how you say it, some of the culture from Vitz, just because of the founders of the place. They try and keep it, they try and make the environment be, even if it's corporate, we try and keep it a bit academic as well, you know, and try and keep the environment in a way where we can engage with each other, even if we're in different teams. You know, even during lockdown, there we still communicate and still have that kind of social experience that's very similar to what I experienced while at Vitz. And it's something that I don't take for granted, and it's something that I really take moving forward. The social experience, the critical thinking, and the academic experience. Those are some of the three things that I'd say I took out from leaving Vitz being at Vitz.
I'm so glad to hear that, and warms my heart that we're doing something right. We kind of coming to the end, and I just want to give another chance to Karen. I sort of broke her flow around data science and the work you're doing. But if there's anything else, Karen, you want to sort of ask about or highlight in terms of your involvement in machine learning.
Sure, yeah. Also, I just want to quickly touch on, Barry, like you always say this, but like the joy of like studying at a tertiary institution is not undergrad. It really comes from like a postgraduate level where the learning is much more social. And yeah, I guess Yuval, you mentioned the same thing. And my heart is kind of like breaking a little bit for all the people who I guess had to start their master's degrees or even PhDs during lockdown, because I think that thing is a lot more difficult to cultivate in an online setting, which really, really sucks. But hopefully Vitz was reigning strong and still able to like help the other Vitzies connect and be great. So maybe just to touch back on the machine learning stuff. So, I'm curious to know sort of what your experience has been like as someone who has moved from quite a research and academic intensive environment to the machine learning community, where I guess it can be that definite mix between like, you know, we're actively researching and doing our own modeling and or even doing hybrid modeling. But then it can also be like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. And so we kind of rely on plug and play solutions from, you know, various providers. And yeah, I guess just wondering what your experience has been like within the machine learning community as someone who has been so heavily invested in research and academia.
Yeah, so for me, I'd say that transition definitely didn't happen overnight. Like there was essentially, there was an uphill climb, and which I'm still climbing to this day. Yep. I wouldn't say that I'm at the top, you know. So it was something where I'd say the lockdown experience actually helped me a lot, because we had to adjust on the fly, you know, like social behavior is changing. We still have to figure out how the subscribers are engaging with the price plan. How do we still make it enjoyable? How do we still make it a win-win for the subscribers and our clients? You know, that was being in that fire kind of helped quicken that process of figuring how things worked out. But I'd say some of the skills, obviously, in research really helped a lot. And I'd also say working in lockdown, I know lockdown has been a tragic experience for a lot of people, but working from home for me has also helped ease in that transition. Because I was doing my postgrad from 2014 to 2019. And in postgrad, I don't know if Barry's time was different, but in my time, literally, you make your own rules. Your supervisor is just like, I need something by this date. Whatever you do between that time, you figure it out. So I was my own boss, essentially. I'd do my research at my times, and I'd try and get the things done by the time that was required. Going into a corporate space, it's a lot different. You have a manager, you have all these KPIs you have to meet. And for me, making that transition on top of just the machine learning stuff was something that I was another hill I was climbing, at, so to speak. And then lockdown happened where we had to work from home. And I was like, oh, I know this. This is what I've been doing for the past 5 years. You know, I don't necessarily work on the 8 to 5. I can plan my day based on the deliverables that I need to do, get the job done that needs to get be done, and have time to do any additional research or any additional reading that I need to do to just ramp myself up on what's required. So I'd say the skills that I learned while being a postgraduate student really helped transition me into the lockdown period, the working from home experience, because until today, I'd say I still use those skills, you know, and that's something that I'd say, yeah, I'm grateful for as well.
Yeah, it's very, and I'm pleased to hear that, because, you know, one wonders about the kind of positives and negatives about lockdown. I firstly just want to say a big thank you to you, Yovel, for kind of sharing with us. And I would like to spend the last few minutes of this episode speaking about our future plans. So when I first introduced this, I said I would talk at the end about our plans for season 3. And some listeners might know that Wits University, my and Yovel's alma mater, is, and it's the place I've spent most of my adult life. Next year, 2022, we'll be turning 100. We celebrate the Wits centenary. And in order to help to celebrate this important milestone at Wits, we're going to be using season 3 to focus on Wits and focus on some of its amazing alumni and faculty who engaged in the digital economy, both locally and internationally. In each episode, we'll bring interviews with one of these people, and I've lined up some really amazing people that have come through this and we'll be interviewing. We will again structure these as conversations around passing the baton, that metaphor that we used in season 2. The big change in season 3 is that I'll be joined by a new co-host. And this co-host is one of its cohort of up-and-coming future digital leaders. In fact, my co-host is the person you've just met, Yovel Genga. So welcome aboard, Yovel. You will be helping me in the next episode. Should I have a drum roll?
Yes.
And I just have to say that Karen's going to be taking a break from our podcast team, because she's going to be setting off on her own exciting adventures, but she will be back.
Yes.
And in the meantime, we just want to wish you lots of luck, Karen, on your journey that you're starting. And please keep in touch, and we look forward to having you back on the podcast. So our new host from the next episode, the first real episode of our podcast, will be Yovel Genga, and we soon will be putting out a list of who we're going to be speaking to, and I can promise you it will be as riveting and as exciting as our previous episodes. So thank you very much. Firstly, a last word from you, Karen, before we wave goodbye.
So firstly, I am very excited to be listening to season 3. I can't wait for the first official episode to drop. Yovel, it's been such a pleasure, like meeting you virtually, which is, I guess, how we meet all people nowadays. It's been a pleasure interviewing you and learning a bit about you. And I look forward to kind of hearing the future episodes that you're on, and also just looking forward to seeing like how your career develops. And I'm sure that our paths will cross as fellow AI practitioners. And then, yeah, Barry, thank you so much for two excellent seasons. I can't wait to be an avid listener on this season and then to join you again in a later season. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Can I please say something as well?
Yes, please.
Yes, I'd also like to thank Karen as well. Like, I've been also a fan of the podcast, and I have had your interaction and interactions with some really huge heavy hitters in the industry. And I just say right now, I can't wait until I get to listen to you again on future podcasts as well. So thank you so much for what you've done. And I really wish you the best on this wonderful adventures that you're going on right now.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And we look forward to welcoming our listeners in the next episode, and we'll let everyone know when it'll be launching and who our guests will be. So thank you and bye bye. Optimizing is produced by Barry Dwolaski. Our team is Barry Dwolaski, Karen Gammy, Evan Wick-Dorowitz, Callum Kuhl, and Yuval Gengler. The companion website is www.thegrandgeeks.annual.